People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life. Welcome, friends, pod listeners, to another episode of the Gravity Commons Podcast. I am Ben Sternke. I'm one of your hosts. I'm here with both of my compatriots, my comrades in arms. I don't know. We all have arms. Christy?
We do. We do. Yes, I have two. Yeah. Two. Yep. And happy Advent.
Happy Advent.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of arms, I've never understood all the hullabaloo about the right to bear arms. I think people should be able to have whatever animal's arms they want.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Have you been hanging around Matt?
Where's that cricket sound effect?
Have you guys ever seen, I just remember there's a cartoon that talks about like the right, it just says like something like, I believe in the right to bear arms. And it's just a person, a crudely drawn person with bare arms. They've just got arms, the bears, the bare arms for their arms.
Listen, I'm just thankful you said that because now we don't have a dad joke at the end of this podcast, everybody. Come on. I'm just claiming it right now.
Name it, claim it.
Matt's like, oh no, now we're going two. We're going to do two.
He's looking stuff up on his computer.
I know, he is. Totally is.
He's got dad jokes. anyway, yes, happy Advent. It is Advent. This is going to be released during the second week of Advent. Before we get into our topic for today, how do y'all relate to Advent? Is this one of those seasons of the church year where you're like, yeah, looking forward to this?
I love Advent.
And what do you love about it?
Well, it's interesting because it's a whole season of waiting, expectation, silence, like those types of things, mm-hmm. which typically, you know, leading up to Christmas, it seems like society is anti all of those things, right? Mm-hmm. It's parties and doing all the things and buying stuff and whatever. And so it just seems so purposeful to really engage and to be present, to be expectant. And so the whole idea of like Jesus being in the womb of Mary and growing and expanding, and I don't know, I just feel like there's goodness there. And we're very intentional during Advent as a family. Like we light a candle, we read. There is like a rhythm of that in my family, and mm-hmm. I love that. And so, I really enjoy Advent.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I think I've had to learn what Advent's about. I grew up and it was simply like, you know, a month and a half of looking forward to a present bonanza. You know, that's what Advent mm-hmm. was. It was like, back in the day when I was a kid, we would get catalogs, like hard color catalogs. We'd circle presents.
Oh, yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. Nice. And I think so for me then, recovering some kind of practice for Advent, for me, it's been two things. One, getting in touch with what I want, right? So like part of what we do with the Gravity Formation course and part of how we, you know, how we're learning to live in love is getting in touch with what get our hearts, you know, what do we want? Mm-hmm. What are we waiting for? What are we longing for? As a way of taking an embodied space in this season of that recalls and remembers Israel's story of waiting for deliverance, salvation, liberation, healing, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's part of what I'm doing. Like today I was journaling before, between my two meetings today, I was journaling about the things that I need to recognize are sad in my life, you know, because I don't want to be sad. I really want to be anything but sad. And so I think getting in touch with why I'm sad is helping me get in touch with, you know, what I want, what's missing. You know, mm-hmm. things are sad for a reason. Mm-hmm. What's missing here? What am I lacking? What do I need to tell the truth about emotionally? So part of it is getting in touch with what I want. And then the other part of it is like creating space for to feel that lack. So fasting is a discipline that I grew up just associating with Lent.
Yeah.
But Advent's also a season of fasting. So
they sometimes call it the little Lent. You heard that?
The little Lent? Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, Advent. I've heard that. Because people give up things up to Christmas Day. Yeah. Just like they fast from things leading up to Easter. So anyway, I resonate with that.
I do too. I do too. Yeah, I think Advent for me doesn't feel like it's not quite as penitential, maybe, as the word for it, as Lent. But it's definitely a season of getting in touch with our longings.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a painful thing to get in touch with longings, especially longings that we're not sure how to fulfill or that we feel like we, you know, it's not up to us whether it happens, like peace and justice on the world, you know, on the earth. And so I feel that temptation definitely to distract myself from those longings and just, you know, look for another dopamine hit and just try to feel good rather than feel the longing. So Advent's a good season for that. So,
yeah.
I agree. Well, Advent is also a great time for us to talk about kind of our topic for today. I realize that I've preached at our church twice since the election. And I think the genesis of this idea, anyway, to talk about these things, these maybe post-election commitments for justice and solidarity. I don't know. Maybe that's what we call this one. But I think that something about the possibilities for kind of real world harm seem to be a lot more vivid for me, anyway, post election for a lot of people in our church, and I think a lot of our listeners as well. And I think Advent, in some ways, came at a perfect time because it does give us a chance to reflect a bit on how to, like, what are the kinds of commitments that we need to make going forward to be faithful as Christ's body, to be faithful as people of faith? Because I think the church has gotten this wrong in a lot of other eras. And it's really easy. I think it's very easy for us, especially in the West, especially as predominantly like white Christians, like it's really easy for us to think of, I guess, some of those real world possibilities of harm and sort of the quote unquote politics of the day. We think of them as a separate category than our faith. And anyway, I've just been thinking a lot about how do we integrate those things? How do we, as a community of faith, move forward in fidelity to the gospel, you know, the good news that we've received, and in solidarity with, you know, those whose lives and livelihoods are being threatened and all of that kind of thing. So anyway, I've been thinking a lot about it and have been collecting a list of commitments that seem important to me that I've been talking about. And I thought we could maybe make a little podcast episode about it.
Yeah.
All right. If you guys are up for it.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm ready to hear him.
Okay.
What's the first thing?
The first one is actually really related to what y'all said about Advent that I think there is a commitment that I'm feeling this Advent and kind of leading into 2025 to stay awake. And I think there's a really powerful thing that happens when we refuse to numb our longing for the world to be made right. I mentioned this earlier, but I think, you know, because our deep desire for justice can be painful, it's really tempting. It's tempting for me anyway to numb out. And there's lots of ways that we can do that. But I think that part of Advent is staying in touch with those longings, staying in touch with our deep desire for goodness and justice and peace and love to, you know, be visited upon the world. So, yeah. And like you were saying, Matt, I think sometimes fasting is part of what helps us stay in touch with those longings, you know, maybe putting down things that we would normally participate in during Advent. That's been a helpful discipline for me. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because I find myself tempted to want to numb out.
Yeah.
Like, because there are times where I'm like, yeah, let me attend to this. Let me like pay attention and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then that gets exhausting if I'm really honest sometimes.
Yeah.
And sometimes I want to avoid it altogether. Like, let me just mm-hmm. pretend that this isn't happening or something. Sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I mean, what I hear you saying is, let's not pretend. Let's mm-hmm. not avoid.
Yeah.
Let's actually attend to what's ahead of us and how we feel about it and what that's bringing up for us yeah. and for the people around us.
Yeah.
And to pay yeah. attention to the longing that we do have in our hearts.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's important. I was actually it's also important to say I think there's an honoring of our capacities as limited human beings. That's important to name in this as well. I just had a meeting today with somebody who was talking about this and saying like, it's actually really important for us, to figure out like when we do need to take a break from sort of being aware.
Yeah.
So I think it's like, it's helpful for us to stay in touch with those longings, but it's also helpful for us to stay in touch with how much can I actually bear here as just a single human being. It's not like you have to watch the news 24/7, you know, and be inundated with the world's trauma, like all the time to be faithful. I do think there is a place and maybe I wouldn't call it numbing out, but there is a place to forget about or to you know, even to distract yourself from the pain. But as long as you're doing it sort of in a mindful way, that's like, okay, I think I know what I need tonight is a funny movie. And that's actually part of it, I think. Part of staying awake is realizing we can't, you know, like you do need sleep as well.
Well, it's like caring for yourself.
Yeah.
And I think like, I mean, I've heard you say, like, you gotta care for yourself, but you also have to care for the people around you. Cause there are people mm-hmm. who are really scared and who are hurting. And
yeah.
And what does it look like to be a community and to be with one another in what they're feeling and processing yeah. and going through? And I've heard you kind of say like, hey, the commons is a place for you to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Can you just double click on how that plays out for you guys?
Yeah, I think the you know, the Gravity community has ended up being a place where a lot of people, that a lot of people have found a sense of belonging there. A lot of people have found a sense of they can actually ask the questions that they need to ask. You know, a lot of people really struggle with being able to gather with people who are seeing the same things that they are and asking the same kinds of questions that they are. And so I'm grateful for that space myself.
Yeah.
But it's also one of the things that we've been, you know, I've been feeling a conviction of doing that online, but also wanting to do that more and more in person as well, just to keep being with one another and caring for each other. I think that's a big part of what it means to be faithful right now.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
A couple other, go ahead. What were you going to say, Christy?
I was just going to say, like, I think there's a sense of honesty in that is sometimes scary to be vulnerable, mm-hmm. to ask the questions, to say the things. But there's a intimacy, a love that gets demonstrated when there can be a community of people being honest and vulnerable with each other about what's going on. So it's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Another commitment. So if we're, if you're keeping track at home, stay awake, don't numb yourself out to the longing. Keep caring for each other, showing up for one another, being with one another. Third thing might be to keep telling the truth about systems of injustice and evil. That's another commitment that I've sensed that I need to keep, on the forefront of my mind. Have you guys heard of the concept of obeying in advance?
No.
No.
So, I think it's Timothy Snyder. I think that's the author of the book. He wrote a little book called On Tyranny. And he said, one of the mistakes that people make, is that they obey in advance. They sort of, they end up sort of giving their obeisance to whatever sort of the dominant power is, in advance, that they, and one of the ways I think that I feel the temptation to do this would be to stop telling the truth about systems of injustice and evil, because it could become more and more costly.
We'll be right back.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, our 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn how to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life that God shares with us. It is a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying out some new practices. In the Gravity Formation course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us toward holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people from all over the world in this formation framework, and it's helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives and learn to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
Let's get back to the show.
I think, so for instance, if you've got a chronic illness, some of our listeners have a chronic illness, and you come into a space like a church on Sunday morning, or you go to your jazzercising, whatever you're going to, right? And somebody says, "How are you?" you know that they don't want you to tell the truth about your chronic illness every time. You know, I was praying with somebody on Sunday at our church, and they have depression, and part of the inertia they have to overcome to ask for prayer for depression is that people don't want to hear about your depression all the time because it's depressing, you know? And so like telling the truth about things that are hard or bad or sad or make you mad or not glad can wear people down, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And then you, I remember, having a friend and we were having this, "How are you?" And, you know, I was just like, "Well, it's been a hard week." And I started to name why it's been a hard week, and they interrupted me and they're like, "Hey, let's just agree to talk about like good things." Like literally, that's what this person said to me. They interrupted me. Mm-hmm. And then I think I told you about that, Ben. And then said, "Hey, let's not share this kind of stuff with each other." And I remember feeling like I thought I had a space to tell the truth about things that are hard, and then I felt like a door got slammed on my face, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all kind of worried about that. We don't want to be the apologies to Debbie's out there, the Debbie Downers, you know. We don't want to be the wet blanket. We don't want to be the person who's always complaining. So when I hear this, I think, yes, but I don't know how.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. It calls for discernment. I mean, I'm even thinking too, like, I feel like I have to discern how much of this to do in a sermon, for example, right? We're all preachers on this, at least on this podcast episode. So that's like a venue, that's an arena. You know, what kinds of things do you say on social media? That's a venue, an arena that we have to discern where and how we're mm-hmm. going to speak up and about what. So I think it demands discernment. But I think there's also a commitment that I have to not avoid doing it, you know, for the sake of expediency, to not avoid doing it just because it's like, well, that'll sure. make my life inconvenient, you know, to keep speaking up in ways that, you know, you have to discern, but to keep speaking up, keep telling the truth.
There is a trickiness, I think, in sharing and speaking up about injustice and not allowing that to cause hate in your heart. Because at least, right? I mean, like,
yeah, for sure.
You're like, no, this is wrong. Or you know, when you get angry about something, it's pointing to the fact that mm-hmm. there's something unfair. There's an injustice there. Mm-hmm. And if you let that fester and grow, mm-hmm. that anger can turn into resentment and hate and contempt, right?
Yeah,
which is another commitment that you were talking about earlier, like what mm-hmm. that you are committed to.
Yeah.
Maybe you can share about that since that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah. I was laughing earlier, Christy. I apologize for laughing in the middle of you talking about that because I thought of Matt, what's that from? Got hate in your heart? Let it out.
Clinton, is it Clinton Bixby? The black white supremacist. It's an old Dave Chappelle bit from the Dave Chappelle show where he's a blind black white supremacist, and Dave Chappelle just is like at these basic Klan rallies, and he's mm-hmm. spewing white supremacist hate. And once he gets done, he says, got hate in your heart, let it out, white power, like that, right? Now speaking a Dave Chappelle bit as a white man is a bit like Michael Scott doing Chris Rock jokes mm-hmm. on The Office, but that's what that's from.
All right. Well, I apologize for setting you up for that because I literally had no idea where that came from. It just popped into my head. Got hate in your heart. Anyway. I think that's really important. Both of those are important to name together probably, Christy. Like for me, I think in the past, my fear of kind of where my anger could take me prevented me from telling the truth about injustice or to feel that anger because I was like, well, I've seen my anger go to some harmful places, so I just don't want to feel that or touch that or know anything about that. But I think the other side of that, it's also a good thing to want to avoid hate, right, and contempt. Like those are not virtues. Mm-hmm. And there is a sense in which this is something I heard the other day on a podcast. I can't remember who this quote is from, but it's from some, I think it's from someone who's part of the civil rights movement in the 60s or something like that. But anyway, they said, like, don't let them get you to hate them. Mm-hmm. Like, if there is contempt and hate involved in our, like, speaking out against injustice, I think that it does end up leading us down a path that ultimately will not bring about justice. And so that's a commitment that I have found that I need to make for myself, is just to refuse the temptation of contempt, even as I try to give more voice to anger and trying to find a way to allow anger to do the work it's meant to do without letting it fester or, fester is maybe a good word, fester into contempt. That feels like an important commitment to me.
I find that, like, at least for me, when there is something going on where I'm trying to speak out about injustice, and there is this growing anger in my heart, mm-hmm. that one thing that helps me is if I can somehow not label, not categorize, box people in as just that thing. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is I need to constantly tell myself the truth about that they are more than just that one thought or that thing that I'm like labeling them in, mm-hmm. that they're more than that. Just like I'm more than the probably the flip side, yeah. right, of whatever yeah. they're yeah. fighting for. Because the more I label, the more I categorize and dehumanize people with that type of language, the more I can hate them.
Yeah.
And I've been real convicted about that, I'd say probably in the last few years. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, discerning hate is something that I think is really hard for an individual to do, you know? For instance, most racists don't think they hate people they're racist against.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know? Most misogynists don't think they hate women. So hate doesn't need to be a feeling. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You don't have to feel vitriol or animus, you know? You don't have to feel that. So hate, so I think we can feel that and not be aware of it, and we cannot feel it and hate. So hate's kind of a tricky thing.
Yeah, it is.
I've been playing around with learning how to oppose wrongdoing and injustice as an act of compassion for the wrongdoer. Right?
Yeah.
Seeing any injustice as being dehumanizing for the person receiving it and the person giving it, it's compassionate to stop the injustice because it harms all of us.
Right.
It harms all of us, right? And I think about how the Old Testament uses the word hate, right? I mean, even in I'm thinking even now of that passage in Genesis. It's not Genesis. It's talking about Esau, right?
Yeah, and Jacob. Yeah,
Jacob I've loved, but Jacob Esau I hated.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about I think hate there is a synonym for reject, but I'm thinking through when I think about opposing injustice as having compassion on the wrongdoer, it rehumanizes the wrongdoer for me, so that I'm not against you, I'm for you and against the things that are harming you and others.
Yes.
But you're still seeing them as a person. You're not just seeing them as a belief about one thing.
Yeah, but I have to find a way into seeing them as a person that doesn't stand by while they harm themselves and others.
Right.
I think too often in the past, my imagination has been either I quote, hate somebody because they're doing wrong, or sort of like be nice to everybody and just appeal to people to do right. And I think I was challenged by Melissa Flora Bixler's book, How to Have an Enemy, to think about the necessary work of opposing wrongdoing, but not dehumanizing the wrongdoer.
Yeah.
And that's tricky.
Let's just say that is different than the typical quote we have heard in evangelical churches of love the sinner and hate the sin.
Yeah.
What you're talking about is different than that. And
it's different than it typically got applied, but it's as a sentiment itself is like, actually, it's about right. You know what I mean? Like, it's about right to say that, yes, we want to love everybody who's made in the image of God, which is everybody. Want to love everyone and recognize that when injustice is being perpetuated, it harms everyone. including mm-hmm. the person who feels that this is necessary for them to do, right? They're being harmed by whatever ideology or fears have taken hold of their heart that make them feel that this oppression that I'm participating in is necessary for my own survival and safety. Mm-hmm. And part of for me anyway, I agree with you, Matt. I think part of my compassion for wrongdoers and people who perpetuate these systems of injustice has been to recognize that it's deep fear. They're so scared.
Yeah.
They're so afraid that if they don't, you know, do this, that they're going to die. They're going to perish. Like that's the fear that grips people's hearts. And I'm familiar with that. You know, like yeah. I have a lot of empathy for that kind of fear. And so I think that helps me to humanize, but also take the actions that need to be taken to stop this sin, you know, stop this injustice.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I was messaging with a friend who, you know, one of the ways that, Christy, I think we were talking about making reparations of truth after we did an interview, on our podcast. And so I've been experimenting with telling the truth on social media about things as a way of bringing like clarity and helping people frame things better. And I had a family member reach out and they were saying, you know, we all have loved ones who are going to vote for Donald Trump, but they aren't bad people. You know, they just feel like they have to, or there's no better choice. Mm. And this family member was saying, like, what do we do with that? Yeah. Like, how do we speak to them, or how do we remain in relationship with them? You know? And I think that's a great question. Mm. I think it's a great question. You know, I think anybody, so for instance, anybody you vote for could support a policy that would cause harm to somebody else you love.
Right.
That's not unique to MAGA, you know. I think anybody, I mean, you know, Biden passes a green energy bill and you work in a coal mine and you lose your job. You know what I mean?
Right.
And like, how do you, you know, and you experience that as wrongdoing or injustice, right? Because it takes away your ability to provide and your vocation. But I do think this question of how to stay connected and in relationship with people who are endorsing or supporting things that you consider harmful is a worthwhile question to ask. Mm-hmm. And yes. I don't have a good answer for it, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a good answer for it. I've had conversations with people, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I've had conversations with people who are like, you know, I can't go home for the holidays because, you know, I'll just say this. I have a number of friends and family members who are in the LGBTQ community who live in Indiana who are telling me that they're moving out of Indiana because either they're married for a long time and have multiple kids, and they don't think that the laws here will be safe for them if they stay, or they require gender care and they don't think they'll be able to get gender care here because it's a fairly red state. And they are making different decisions. Those people are making different decisions on who they want to be close to and who they don't than I am.
Yeah.
Because it for them, somebody who votes for, you know, the Republican senator or the Republican governor of our state who makes the legality of their marriage in question, puts their whole family with four kids in jeopardy in their minds, mm-hmm. there's a higher stake or a higher cost for them because of what that represents. Then for me, it's like I have solidarity with this person, but my marriage to my wife is not in jeopardy.
Right.
And I don't know how to adjudicate well, I do know that it's not my job to tell people
right.
who they should be with and who they shouldn't and how they should feel. Right. But I also don't know how to adjudicate my own solidarity in that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that too. Like how, because obviously our solidarities are, there's various kinds of solidarities, right? Like I'm in, you know, you can feel in solidarity, you can act in certain ways in solidarity, but, you know, to act all the way in solidarity would be to move, you know, move wherever that person goes, right? So like our ultimate, like I'm in a lot of solidarity with my wife, like we're yeah. going to live a life together. And so, yeah, I think there's this discernment that needs to happen as we think about what that would mean, you know, to be in solidarity, because there's, you know, obviously even if those folks move out of Indiana, mm-hmm. there's still plenty of folks who have decided to stay here mm-hmm. that also, you know, that we can be in solidarity with as well. So,
right.
Yeah, I think those are the difficult questions that are coming up.
Yeah.
And now a word from a sponsor.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
I think we just need to start talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would be nice to be able to have a conversation about it. And even, you know, even telling people, I don't know how to be with you right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to be with you. I remember several years ago, I had a friend, a couple that I was friends with. And one of the people of the friend group, sorry. Husband and wife. The wife decided to divorce the husband, and the husband did not want to get a divorce, and the wife was going to go through with it, and the wife wanted to hang out with me and my wife, but we were also like having sort of vicarious grief mm-hmm. with the husband.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying like, Let's take off the table the morality of whether the divorce was legit. Like, legitimate is right. just a bad word to use. But like, was the right. divorce a moral good overall? Let's just take mm-hmm. that off the table. And let's just say like, it's really hard for me to hang out with you, ex-wife, and have fun with you. Knowing that I'm also, my heart is also with this person over here
yeah.
that you've hurt, that experienced hurt from you, that I also love. Mm-hmm. It's just morally complicated for me. It was hard for me.
Yeah.
But that takes a lot of maturity to notice yeah. that, to name it, to then like process through it, to say something to the people around, like, I think our listeners are like emotionally mature and intelligent.
Yeah.
But what's hard is when we're in that type of situation with somebody who isn't, who can't have that conversation, who can't even broach the subject. Mm. Right. Which then makes it, yeah. I think, even more difficult.
Yeah.
I like that you basically implied that all of our listeners are above average.
Come on. Yeah. They are.
You must be.
We are at least B minus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. We've got to move through some of these. Cause I got another call I got to get on. So some of the other commitments, I just wanted to mention these, briefly before we go. One of them is to, like, I've felt a renewed, urgency to like learn from like the great cloud of witnesses, both historic and contemporary, like people who have been doing the kind of work that I need to learn how to do. I just have sensed this like renewed commitment to learn from, a lot of those voices. So, I probably can just leave it there. There is a book list that, Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg, who's been on our podcast, she put out a book list for, like, I think it's just called like organizing. I'll put that book list, in the show notes, because it was really helpful to have like a bunch of helpful books kind of all in one spot, that can help us to do some of this stuff, which is the I don't know what number we're on here. Sixth. The sixth one is to learn to organize and practice solidarity with the marginalized, to resist oppression, instigate and sustain real change in our communities. And so that's kind of the main thing that I've felt this, urgency to learn how to participate in. I think, being able to enact and demonstrate the kind of community that we want to build instead of just explaining it, is really important. And I think that's a phrase from Aubrey Hendricks' book, The Politics of Jesus, where he talks about that was one of Jesus' strategies, was that he was enacting and demonstrating that kind of community. He wasn't just teaching on it, but his disciples were like an alternative community. Jesus was organizing, in sort of building that community of disciples. And so, I've just sensed this like urgency to learn. What does that look like for us to do, like as a church, for me to do as a clergy person, in my social situation? Like, what does that kind of solidarity look like? I think that's an important aspect of, I don't know, the commitment that feels important to me as we go forward.
Yeah, as in all these things, like, you know, stay engaged and, don't have contempt and be in solidarity. My issue isn't like that conviction disagrees with me or I don't have that conviction. My problem is there's too many people to be in solidarity with. Like I just can't be in solidarity with everybody.
Right.
I just can't, you know, like that story I shared about with like my friends going through divorce. It was really hard for me to be in solidarity with both of them.
Yeah.
One of them felt like both of them, because of the nature of that relationship, both of them felt like my solidarity with the other was a betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think there's other examples too, where, I had a pastor friend who got accused of, abuse. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was speaking very publicly about, church abuse online, advocating for survivors. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard for me to be in solidarity with my friend who was accused of abuse.
Yeah.
You know, to know how to do that. Like, mm-hmm. those are a couple examples. So not only is it like hard to be in solidarity when there's two sides that are antagonistic with each other, but then, you know, you've got the autistic community, the handicapped community, the Muslim community, mm-hmm. the Hindu community, you know, the Latino community.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it can quickly feel overwhelming. And that, you know, there's like local discernment that's definitely needed. Kind of everywhere we go. But I do think, you know, I listened to another podcast the other day that was challenging me on this issue that y'all actually just talked about earlier, which is like part of our solidarity is also then with, like, on a human level, is with friends, family, and neighbors who, you know, may have voted for harm, you know, like who may have been taken in by the propaganda. Mm-hmm. Like, what does it look like? So even the attempt to stay connected to them, I see that as an act of solidarity in a sense, to be like, I'm in solidarity with your humanity. Even though I think you made a terrible, terrible choice, you know what I mean? And I think this is part of, to come back to like Aubrey Hendricks, one of the things that he says Jesus' strategy was to treat the people's needs as holy.
Yes.
And so I think there's something about that I'm trusting will lead me, you know, in our church and like, and hopefully all of us as we seek to live in these ways, like, what does it look like for me in my local situation with the relationships that I have, the situation that I have? What does it look like for me to, you know, treat the people's needs as holy? And so how do we learn to make those decisions about, you know, what kinds of concrete acts we're going to take, you know, and what the costs might be for doing some of those things. So I think it's part of, you know, you mentioned Melissa Flora Bixler, but her book, you know, How to Have an Enemy. I think this is part of that. Part of the choices of solidarity are choosing who our enemies are going to be, mm-hmm. right? Because sometimes there is a sense in which, you know, we wouldn't necessarily want to make enemies, but our choices for who we're going to stand with in solidarity end up, you know, end up making people feel that they have to oppose us. And, you know, suddenly we have an enemy. So an enemy to love, by the way, but an enemy nonetheless.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we could probably do a whole podcast on that one.
As we feels like it. All these. Grow into it. I got more to say about all this stuff.
I know.
Should we do a two-parter here? Should we? What's that? Should we do this two parts? Maybe
we could.
Maybe this is part one and we record a part two later with the other ones.
Okay. That sounds good.
How about that?
Let's do that. I mean,
yeah.
That feels better we'll to me than part two. Through
than rushing.
Than rushing. Yeah. Okay. All right, friends. Well, we've got a couple more, at least. Maybe in the intervening time we can come up with a few more as well. But anyway, we've got a few more to talk through. Right. So join us next time.
It's a cliffhanger.
Oh, wow. It is a cliffhanger. It really is.
To be continued. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Should we give people a teaser or should we just make them tune in next week?
No, I think we invite them to like, what are they committing to?
Oh, I love that, Christine.
Let's hear from them. And okay. So, because these are some of your commitments and Matt and I are on board, but like, what mm-hmm. what are they committing to? And we can hear from them.
We would love to hear from you. podcast@gravitycommons.com. Let us know what convictions or commitments that you are sensing mm-hmm. you're being called into. Also, let us know what questions you have. Like a lot of, you know, we've talked about both on this podcast episode, we've talked about both commitments and convictions, but also like almost every single one of these comes with questions, mm-hmm. right? It's not like we know exactly how we're supposed to work this out. I think we work it out on the ground. We work it out as we go. And so, you know, commitments and questions go together.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. We'd love to hear from y'all.
Bring it.
All right.
Well, it sounds good. We made a quick decision to finish this one up next week. It'll still be Advent. Beloved listener, we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Peace.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect there with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith and spirituality and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. Finally, we would love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, you can go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.